Yo, Luke, UFC 278's coming up. We should talk about it, like, with no punches pulled, like, getting right to the core of what it's actually all about, even if it offends people, even if it's not PC.
Is this fucking thing on?
I'm talking about real talk. Dude,
fuck, man.
At least you guys are telling me in advance which one we're doing this time.
You know, before the pregame preview, you gotta let out all the negative, right? The fluid, the vibe that was in you beforehand. You know what I mean? Come in. Men's room. I mean, I don't even know if this is legal, right? Chuck, can you be a voyeur in
the six pack out? Isn't that the old joke? Wait, Brian, do the old thing.
Don't fucking put that shit on me.
Wow. Can't believe this happened. Okay. Hey, let's go talk like men do, all right?
Hi there. On August 20th, live on pay-per-view, the UFC, for the second time ever in their history, returns to Salt Lake City, Utah. Yes, Salt Lake City, Utah, for UFC 278. Kamaru Usman will defend his welterweight title against longtime contender and previous foe, Leon Edwards. We're here to talk about it. This is the Morning Combat UFC 278 pregame preview. Luke Thomas, Brian, the King of Connecticut, Campbell.
Yeah.
There he is. Yeah. And at the end, you know that dirtbag. There he is himself, the man in the hat.
Chuck, you've been around enough, you've been on this show enough to know what we expect from you on a pregame preview, right?
Yes. And I take a little bit of offense at the King of Connecticut. Now, remember, I'm also from Connecticut, but I am known as the mayor of the Nutmeg State. So
okay.
I'll take that.
He's also the jester at the same time. So it's kind it works for both ways.
Luke, what kind of talk should we expect in this one?
You want to sell the merch now? Is that what this is about? Want to sell some shirts?
I'm drinking my Nelk Boys dad seltzer, hard dad seltzer, because I'm a hard dad, okay?
Been hitting it.
He has been hitting that. Yeah. It's like the fifth of those. By the way, did you put the awards there? I just noticed
that. No, I didn't. I win those, though.
You do win those. Yeah. Congratulations, Brian.
Chuck, have you ever been close to tragedy or
not a repeat,
been close to folks who had? Yeah, we're going to back-to-back that shit. Anyway, Salt Lake City, John Stockton country, monogamy country. You
That's
know what
right.
I'm talking about?
Blue laws
where a man could be
liquor.
A man. I'm just kidding. This is a peculiar location.
Yep.
A bit of a peculiar card.
Top heavy.
Yes, for sure. Interesting. It's been a fun summer. There's big fights on the horizon for UFC. There's not too much negative you can say, but a little bit light for a pay-per-view card. And I feel like we're saying that a little bit more than normal of late.
I would agree. And I would say, Chuck, as the guest here, seems to me, here's my theory. What do you make of it? In line with what BC is making, which I think is totally correct, the UFC is now going on the road. And I think it's a finite roster. They're robbing Peter to pay Paul they're making great fight night cards up and down, and that comes at a cost of still having a decent main card and especially some better fights at the very top, but it is costing it in terms of the overall depth. True or false?
I think that's true on whole. And I mean, you could look down the event of schedules and kind of find this phenomenon pretty much. You don't find too many where all five fights on the main card of a pay-per-view our must-see TV, or even like where there's that bang for your buck fight, like
the
O'Malley
one. Wait a few weeks in Abu Dhabi, we'll see.
Well, that is actually the one, but I mean, obviously they're getting a lot of money to do that one.
But 279 has a strong main event. I mean, the strongest main event with Hamzat and Diaz, but the rest of the card
the rest go like to the wayside. But it's not the worst card though. Honestly, like when you look at it, there are three very strong fights, and then there's some little intrigues in this. I feel like it's actually a little bit stronger of an offering than we've seen in previous.
I actually think it won't really matter. I don't know what you can charge in Salt Lake City, but the gate will be good, right? Second time UFC's ever come. First time pay-per-view, because the last one was a fight night between Caceres and Rodriguez.
Wow.
Damn.
So I think that's right.
Dry county, too.
I'll get dead wrong for it. Either way.
Is it really a dry county?
It's a dry state.
Do you have to go to, like, you can go to, like, the state run?
I'm told the laws are uneven geographically. I don't quite get it either.
So is the balance of power in many ways.
Speaking of
a wet Tuesday, what are you drinking there, Chuck?
Some kind of rose IPA that the crew has hooked me up.
Are you back on the sauce, Steph?
No, I gotta mind my alcohol intake.
I've been there. I'm there with fast food. You know, I can't.
Listen,
gotta
catch you in Vegas if I'm gonna see you. Drink.
Exactly. It's like I got that out of my system. I think I'm good for a little while.
Yeah.
All right, Chuck. Let's start at the very top because it is a highly interesting contest between Kamaru Usman, maybe, probably in most people's view, the pound-for-pound best fighter in the sport, taking on a guy who he has previously fought, is a longtime, very deserving contender. UFC's tried to put him in some spots to get him some brighter spotlights more recently, even though there's been uneven
issues. Remember when they stuck him backstage with Masvidal? That was a good spot.
Yeah, okay, it's been uneven, but like they gave him the Diaz fight. I think that did some good for him. Okay, but Chuck,
yeah.
When you think about the significance of this fight or the best way to interpret it, what is it? Is it strictly just a thing that Kamaru Usman's trying to add to his legendary resume, or is there sort of more appeal to it beyond that?
No, I mean,
that? Again, of course, Edwards could win, yes.
I think so. I mean, obviously, like, he is chasing history very quietly chasing history at this point, right? If he wins this, 16 fights in a row, he ties Anderson Silva for the UFC's all-time mark.
That matters.
It does matter. And it's like, I think he is entering that GOAT conversation, and this is just another notch in that. And I think that given where Leon has been, you know, going, what was it, 2015 or 16 when they fought last?
It was a long time.
December, right? You know what's even crazier? I was at the fight, but I don't even really remember it that well because it was that long ago. Wow. And it was in Orlando. Still remember pieces of it. But, like, just given all of that, he's been surging that hard, coming up to get this fight and to, like, get, you know, the chance at this and how many travails he's had to go through. From his perspective, it's very easy to see the motivation and all the things that go into it. From Kamaru's perspective, it's basically... I think it is. It's the next guy. You know what I mean? Like, he's had to kind of defend against guys he's faced before a couple of times now, and he always shows up a little bit better, a little bit more dialed in, and I just feel like this is just another legacy marker for him. But it's crazy to me that how quiet this is,
oh, yeah,
considering that he's making that kind of history.
You know, you do hear Dana not going the full-on, hey, guys, Baron Von Hennenbrau is the number one. Remember, he used to go full-on press to tell you,
yes,
how good Hennenbrau was. But you're actually hearing Dana saying, like, yeah, I kind of think if Kamaru stays down this path, like, he's going to be a GOAT before we know it. A GOAT, not the GOAT, but, like, in that conversation. He's never lost in the UFC. He could tie Anderson Silva that you mentioned with that win streak record. Chuck, something we talked about recently in Morning Combat, but I am interested in your side of it before we get into the matchup. Just looking at Kamaru, to actually get there, to actually get in that, you know, GSP, Anderson Silva, John Jones, Fedor, you know, that territory, mm-hmm, the five, the upper room. Does it have to be retiring undefeated in the UFC? Do we need a second division weight class, which he's rumored at times as high as light heavyweight? Or is it just keep winning and when you're ready to go, go? But Hamzat's coming. You know he's coming.
Well, I think that's a big reason why he could stay there. He could stay there. If Hamzat gets there, you know, and everything goes the way that it looks like it might happen, which almost never happens in MMA, by the way. But if that happens, and he's able to get through Hamzat and he's able to keep going, I feel like he would earn that keep, right? Like, I feel like he's already in the conversation of the GSP thing, even though he hasn't had the longevity yet. He's already in the conversation, just given that he hasn't been in a lot of trouble. I mean, it's so quiet that it's almost like when a guy does his job so effectively, you don't really notice that he's on a streak like this. He's done it so well. Like, whereas GSP down the stretch had some trouble. Like, he was, you know, guys were catching up, then the parody, the motivation, all those things. They started to catch up to him. He was getting nicked. I know that, like, the Condit fight.
And the,
like,
Hendricks fight.
The Hendricks fight, a lot of people thought he lost. On first watch, I thought he lost. So you're getting into that territory where it's like you're now looking at the details of these guys' run. If he's able to just go through this fight, come out unscathed, and maybe he does meet a Hamzat down the road.
He's going to have to meet Hamzat. He's going to have to. Unless he says...
But that's a big one.
It would be strategic, but unless he says, sorry, guys, I just finished off my welterweight requirement, I'm going up to light heavyweight tomorrow, I think that's the only way people wouldn't get on him for not fighting Hamzat right now. I think that's the only way. But that's more of future. To close on Kamaru, is it safe to say, unbeaten in the UFC, the only two close fights have been Colby 1 and 2? Is that the only two? Is that the only hiccups that he's had?
The Edwards fight was competitive for a time.
It's like started competitive and then it's tilted
Kamaru, if you watch the first fight, I feel like he has a little bit more trouble in round one than you might remember. Yeah. But by round three, he was taking over. It's a good question.
I mean, he's been going downhill.
Struggled a bit in the Masvidal first fight, but that was a weird fight when they flew him out on a week's notice.
I don't know if he struggled.
Yeah, that might be strong. But I mean, he
struggled, you know. But I think people expected dominance, and I think in that sense, he perhaps struggled.
Honestly, man, you're hard-pressed to, like, just thinking about that.
Not many.
He hasn't struggled
like
that
that's
often.
That's the argument that keeps Habib in the greater GOAT conversation. It's a trendy one, but you say, okay, he didn't fight everybody we wanted, but he's undefeated and he freaking dominated everybody.
He's never
short
been
of
taken down.
Gleison
never been cut.
That's
never
crazy.
Never been knocked down.
I mean, those stats matter. Like, you think about that, you're like, dude, it's chaos in there. For 15 straight fights, he's never been spent a minute on his back. Somebody, you know what I mean? Like, crazy. Those stats are nuts.
Bananas. Still, where are you in this conversation? Like, I think it's worth having it out loud. How does Kamaru compare to GSP? Now, let's talk about a world assuming he wins.
Well, we will talk about the Edwards side because we're sort of like, oh, Cuomo's going to win. It's going to be so great. But of course,
yeah, that's always the danger.
He may not. But let's assume that he does for just a second. What would then you say an actual comparison to the GSP resume? Actual comparison.
It's hard because GSP had a bigger impact on the sport because it was he was like a pay-per-view draw and a superstar, something Usman hasn't gotten to, although I'll give him credit. Not only has he evolved his game since becoming champion in large ways that you got to wake up and go, yeah, I guess he is the pound-for-pound king. He's fucking great. He hasn't made the kind of leap into people's hearts or into people's bank account like GSP has. Now, that might not matter at all in this discussion, but that's a big difference between them. He's been more dominant than GSP, but would you say GSP over the long haul fought better competition? I don't know.
I don't know about that.
I can say he had bigger fights.
Yeah.
Right? In terms of
fights that meant more.
Well, I could say just in terms of the size of it, how much was the world paying attention and how much did that affect the stakes? People think it's either commercial or it's actual, right. But there's a blend between them as well. One kind of reinforces the other, more so the commercial reinforces the stakes. People pretend there's more stakes when it's more commercial in a lot of ways.
Should Usman deserve more praise because GSP, if there's any knock against him, it's that he got safer as the win streak and the rain went on.
Yes, he lost, of course.
It's not, okay, Usman's not knocking out everybody, but since joining Trevor Whitman, he's upped his game, and you can't call him one-sided anymore. You know what I mean? The striking's not on the level of the wrestling, but he's working at it.
I mean,
does he get more credit than GSP because he's doing that late after becoming champion?
I don't know, but I feel like with GSP, like you mentioned it, I feel like the scrutiny was so much higher on him. Like each one felt like such a big event. He was one of their original pay-per-view draws.
He was the king of Canada.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, and it's like he was the first big ambassador of the sport that took it out of its like he's showing up with suits and like just making it seem like he's an actual sportsman, like a professional athlete, where some of these guys weren't doing that. I felt like he kind of mattered on such a scale that was different during a period when it needed it, when it's defining itself. But like you get into Usman, and obviously I really think that he's been more dominant over this course of time, but it's just been very quiet. And I don't know, maybe it's these reasons, like we're not paying attention to him like we were GSP. But man, I mean, his run, and especially like even just the Masvidal fight we were talking about, the second one, just kind of planting the, I'm going to take you down in the first round so that Masvidal's kind of like not sure what he's doing, and then just clubbing him with one of the greatest knockouts. I mean, just his punch goes right through his face and all the way through. Like there's no, the fist never stops. It just keeps going as it goes through him. I mean, that stuff.
And his
You have to look at that though, and you're just like, dude, he beat him at his own game.
Yeah, of Gilbert still holds up.
And I mean, his last couple fights, in historical context, we should be talking to him about him more like this, I think. You know, we really should, but it's just he hasn't had nearly the spotlight that GSP did. I just feel like that's the case, right?
How would you describe the relationship between Kamaru and the fan base, either one?
Well, they were booing him for the Masvidal fight, which is insane. What was it, Jacksonville, though? It was like someplace.
The rematch, you mean?
Yeah, the rematch. It was like Jacksonville, which.
Well, he got cheered eventually. I mean, that knockout was hard.
But as they introduced him, I'm like, and that's just something I don't think that we've really seen from GSP ever. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like he was, like, the superhero for the sport.
He was.
But
he was freaking cool, too.
I don't even feel like he's polarizing. It's almost like the Josh Koscheck thing back in the day where it's like, do you care? You can love me or hate me, but do you care?
They respect him. They don't love him.
Right. That's kind of where he's at. I feel like he still falls into a place where I'm not sure everybody cares.
But he gave him a brawl. The first Colby fight is one of the best fights in the company's history.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's not 100%. Like he's holding back in terms of his performance in any way.
I'm not sure why it is.
Is he a little, honestly. Be honest, is he a little corny? Is he a little corny, Luke?
I think that early on.
I mean, I'm just easy.
No, I'm trying to answer your question. Like early on, did he had an early game that was predicated on control more than a lot of other things. And by the time he got all of these finishing skills and then the stand-up skills and all that kind of other stuff, the fan base is still kind of stuck on the first impression. Plus, remember, he had that time where he won. He was like, that was 30% of me. And, you know, I believe him that he had a bad injury or whatever, but the fan base just roasted him for it.
The first impression thing is a big point because I think originally during his run, he was not above figuring out the way to win. And how is he going to win? He knows he can wrestle. He knows he can put you against the fence and just make life miserable for you and dump you on the mat. Like, that's what he knew he could do that. Even in the first Edwards fight, there's a few boos in that crowd. Mm-hmm. I was there and I kind of remember that portion of it, even though, you know that he was minus 300. People knew what he could do already at this point. But it was his early impressions of maybe being boring, but it really hasn't played out that way as his career has gone on.
No.
But I feel like that first impression somehow still lingers. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, it hasn't been completely.
It's weird. GSP, I remember when he began to make wrestling the dominant form of his game, that there was this, like, you know, there was some reluctance about it because it wasn't quite as exciting as before, but it was like more like, wow, this guy never wrestled along these other D1 guys.
That's true.
And look at him out wrestling him. And, you know, they were sort of seen as like savvy and a sign of like the game's development. Kamaru leveled up with his striking, right? Like, that's a new thing he built on the job. And
he built it on the mountaintop against, like, right. Burns and then Masvidal. Right. I mean, that's...
The Masvidal one, I mean...
It's not sufficiently respected in that yeah. way. But at the same time, like, dude, GSP's fights, they were enormous. The Sarah sure. fights were enormous. The
and
Shields
he went on
fight
to win
enormous.
A second title, which I know isn't part of this welterweight
The Dan Hardy fight was enormous.
It was. Know? Newark.
You're Jesus. Damn right, it was. Usman... I mean, look, if Usman wins this and then fights and beats Chimaev, it's going to be hard to say anything negative against
it's
him.
It's perfect that there's a guy like that coming up.
Right, because you can perfect. Say, okay, was this the best welterweight era, even comparative to GSPs at certain times? Maybe not, but that's the guy,
the
man.
The fact that Gilbert Burns is almost pulling like the Rocky, I just want to go the distance with Chimaev. You know what I mean? Like, it's yeah. kind of pulling this, and there's a silver lining to that. It tells you where we are perception-wise with where Khamzat is. Now, if he gets by Nate, which I think most people think he will, you just and obviously if Usman's able to win, I think it really does set up the thing that would make him that into that GOAT. I feel like that would set up the match
yeah.
that would put him over that way.
Also, know? Something to think about, Chuck, I would love to get your sense, which is to what extent is, like, if he talks about moving weight, he talks about going to 205 because obviously his, you know, I think he and the middleweight champion is
Adesanya, they call him, yeah.
Yeah.
Adesanya, you can say the name.
I was going to get to it, fuckface.
I thought you were, you know, like a
trying
blind man in the orgy, just
no,
like
no,
searching
no.
around. I was like, here's the boob, put it
no,
right
sorry.
In your head.
Yes, no. I was just taking my time, but okay, yes.
Suckle it, right? Just just welcome it in, right? You know?
There's, I want to dunk so
tune
hard.
In Tokyo. I mean, whatever you're into, really.
You okay. Adesanya, the fact that now you can't have him move up. He doesn't want to go to 185, but imagine a world here for a second. Giggle fest. Just
please,
let it out,
I'm
Chuckles.
Here,
let
I'm
it
here
out.
For the hardcore analysis, okay? So please, get it on.
The point I'm trying to make is, imagine a world where Izzy is just at 205. So now you have middleweight as it stands. Do you favor a 185 version of Usman to beat Whitaker? Because that's really the central question here.
Wow.
Whitaker is the best guy.
Wow,
if not named
right to it, dude. He went, wow.
Does he do that? Because I will tell you, I don't know the answer, but I would not be surprised if he won.
Oh, yeah.
I'd not be surprised if he won.
Oh, put some respect on the damn Reaper. Come on.
No. But I agree with that.
Dude, you don't think that's competitive? Okay. You don't think that's competitive?
I think it's definitely competitive.
Yeah, it's competitive.
Yeah.
Rob Whitaker, if he got that win, that would be a very nice
Is it safe
nice
to say
win.
Usman's better than we thought he was and better than we might actually know he is right now?
I think so, because he can't get really tested at 185, which would be the natural assumption, and he could very well fit that weight class, given he's already huge at 170.
There will be a lot of people watching this going, what the hell does Rocky Edwards have to do to get you guys to actually talk about this fight, let alone
Let's talk about him for a second.
First he gets relegated over to Salt Lake City, now we don't even talk about him.
Okay.
You know, plus, when people think Rocky, they think Raquel, you know?
They might. They also might think the guy from Philly.
I'm Keisha in that relationship with you, definitely.
I don't even know what that means. I don't even know what that means.
I'm the corner that wouldn't throw the towel. But anyway, go ahead.
Wow. Okay.
I got
Mark
dark.
Montoya over
I
here.
Got dark go. Right. All right. So let's talk about Leon Edwards here. Here's a guy whose career has always been good. He has always been respected, but in terms of like critical acclaim. But has definitely hit some roadblocks, a couple of key losses along the way, obviously one to Usman. But more than that, the pandemic really derailed that specific sprint you could tell he was ready to make.
The Bilal fight, he was going to make
right.
a big
BT
moment.
BT Sport had made a huge, great hype package for it, and then the pandemic hit and it kind of all went to shit, even though he was involved in the Jorge Masvidal incident. Where do you think, what do you make of his contendership rise, Chuck?
Yeah.
And let's just start there. Talk me through what you see in his journey.
It's weird with him because of the Bilal, the way that thing, you know, in these big showcase moments, I feel like there was something strange that would happen, right? Like there was that. He's had other weird things. I mean, and if you look at his career.
No, wasn't it Woodley he was supposed to fight? He fought Bilal and got eye poked.
Right.
Yeah,
he's had consistent.
But
the moments he's supposed to break through.
Yes, he's supposed to break through.
It's never, even Nate stole the thunder.
Oh,
that's
what I'm
saying.
Yes,
even with Nate, you know, obviously like people talked about in the fifth round when he gets caught. I feel like he's always got a little bit of an asterisk to his name. And then even like if you look at his rise, I think he's been fairly masterful at sort of figuring out the rhythm of a fight, figuring out what's going to happen in a fight, and just kind of exploiting it and going with it. Not maybe not the greatest finisher, because honestly, when you look at his resume during this whole time. He's got a submission victory. He has that eight. I don't even think this fell into the run itself, but he had the 8-second knockout, which is like still I think a record for the division. And then he was 1 second away from like going to a decision against Sabata, right? Like he was that should have been a decision, but everything else is a decision. And so I feel like he's one of those guys who's like he's kind of happy to figure out how to beat you and beat you. And I guess that's what makes it a little bit like a stretch of the imagination to say, how are you going to do that against Usman? How are you going to figure out what he's bringing and be able to beat him over five rounds?
He's perennially underrated. That's true. But is he also kind of overrated based on who he's beaten in this win streak? Where we, like, I mean...
You believe Edwards is overrated?
Well, I'm not saying that outright, but I believe that...
I do not
believe that. We look at him as so underrated because he's never been able to get over the hump commercially or get sort of a fair moment until now, right? He's always sort of been that guy who was most deserving but least likely to get the call, right? Through that, though, because he hasn't beaten... I guess the level of names you would expect for someone with a win streak this long, not always his fault in terms of the matchmaking, obviously, you get my point, but does he enter this fight with a shot? Is that shot, are we not seeing how good that shot actually is because he's underrated, or are we overvaluing it because of the win streak? I'm trying to really figure out who exactly he is. Because
and I feel like people are all over the extremes on this, too. I've talked to people who think Leon is completely underrated, and people are sleeping on that he can have a chance to win this fight or will win this fight or the reverse of that, you know what I mean?
Is which we saw it already happen this fight once. We're going to see it happen again. You
know? Right.
Well, a couple things, though. We didn't talk about the fact that Kamaru Usman's coming off of surgery on his hand. I'd be curious to see at 34, maybe he's older than that. I have to double-check his age, 33 maybe.
No, he's pushing 35. He's not young.
Yeah. That's what I mean, like how that's going to heal. Yeah. This is his first fight back since then. Remember, the fight got delayed for it. It was supposed to be International Fight Week and on top of things, and it didn't materialize. Anyway, so here we are with that. But with Edwards, I will tell you, you know what stands out to me about his game? His game is super smart. Like, he problem solves, right, over the course of five rounds, and he manages risk really well in all the positions. He has a clear purpose and assignment, and he understands exactly where everything's going to go on the feet as well. He begins to set distance and pace. It's super thoughtful, and you can see him problem solve round over round. The problem that I think he faces, and this is a commercial issue as well, there's just not a lot of devastation to it.
Right.
It's incredibly intelligent. That's why like a coach might watch him and be like, dude, this guy's fucking good. Yeah, he is. He's really fucking good. But he just hangs around being really good.
What do you think, though? Because you watched the first fight, just like I've watched it. Like,
yep.
Over the course of the fight, Usman understands how to just, like, overcome him. Basically, just to...
That's where it comes down to. It's like, if you watch the first fight, there's not a huge gap between Usman and Edwards. Like
in round one, you're saying.
In the entire fight. I mean, by round three, it was obvious. But he wasn't getting his ass kicked. Even though it was kind of settling into a rhythm.
That's what it was.
But it wasn't like, dude, Edwards didn't get the shit beat out of him at all. Like, this was not that thing. In the first round, like, he was making trouble for him as well. It's like, the gap between them isn't significant. It's like, but what's the thing that gets you over the hump?
Yeah.
I don't know, but I can say if Kamaru is diminished or didn't take it seriously or the hand's an issue, you know, the difference between them is slight. Any change about Kamaru flips
it. But do you see the takedown defense? Because I'm like, I guess when I was looking at that, he got taken down six times the first time.
Yes.
It kept getting easier for Usman.
That's right.
And went down.
He got easier over time.
Like, just kind of looking at Leon's run set, not everybody was trying to take him down. But guys like Vicente Luque, for instance, was able to take him down. And Gunnar Nelson was able to take him down a few times.
Yeah, but he beat both those guys.
I know. But I'm just saying,
right? He beat both.
I mean, can you, like, I guess all that considered, like, is his takedown defense good enough? And if he is taken down, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like some people think
Here's
that's inevitable. Can he do it?
He said, look, you called Leon Edwards thoughtful earlier.
Super.
I was thoughtful in high school. Really thoughtful. I didn't get laid, though. Okay? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, can he get over the hump with what he's bringing to the table based on what Chuck just said? You know what I mean? Can he actually win this fight, Luke?
Something would have to be different about their dynamic, right? If their dynamic is, as we're discussing it here, I don't really see a path, to be candid with you. But if Edwards has a really inspired moment, it's just hard to like see him, dude. Let's talk about this aspect too, dude. This would be a fucking monumental win by Edwards.
Offset City.
Do you beat the number one pound-for-pound fighter in the sport?
And spoil the thing that's supposed to, you know.
And this inevitable coronation we keep talking about with Edwards. And also, with Usman. And one aspect we're not really talking about, it's hard for us to know.
You said Usman,
right? Yeah. Did I say Usman?
Yeah, it's cool.
Robbie Osborne.
Kamaru Usman. I'm
what am I saying? Usman, sorry. I'm also talking about the UK effect here. Dude, there's a there's a big need that's for like who's going to be the next star. To beat the number one pound-for-pound guy.
I like how people are talking about Aspinall. He might be the next champion.
To go home.
Overlooking Edwards, who had a fight.
To go home with that belt back to the UK. Come on, dude. That would launch him into fucking stardom, at least for MMA.
I mean, you beat Haley Joel Osment.
Sorry, bro. Sorry.
It's cool.
Just spitting out sounds at this point. Seriously, though, what do you make of this, BC? Don't you think that we've talked about the UK market in boxing. It's red hot.
And it'd be his moment, dude. Like, the fact that every Morning Combat or every time Chuck's on the ring show and all your various shows and websites.
Really, just these two.
And we're basically going, you know,
you're not very monogamous with us. No.
Rocky deserves better.
I'm like the people out in Salt Lake City, you know what I mean?
That's right.
Yeah, Rocky's better than he gets credit for being. Can you actually imagine him going over the top and winning this? It would be massive, considering he also has a loss to this guy, but that was long before this guy was the pound-for-pound king, long before the evolution that we're talking about. It's, you know, Rocky's evolved as well. But correct me if I'm wrong, he hasn't had that one moment, that one fight, that one situation where you're like, that's what I needed to see to believe that he can win this championship.
Like a real catalyst moment?
What was that moment?
I don't know.
Not really.
I mean, he was on his way there against Nate? Was he on his way to a 5-round whitewashing where you're like...
Well, yes, but he wasn't... I mean, it would have just sort of been a pedestrian victory in the end.
Yeah,
the only reason people were talking about it is because of the dramatics in the end.
Yeah, there was a belief that Edwards was going to wash him. Like, it was going to be, you know, a beatdown and stop him. And it was just, you know, it was clear. It was dominant to an extent, but not like a...
Okay,
he didn't rough him up.
What's the most likely path to an upset victory? If this happens and Rocky finally gets his moment,
striking.
What is the way this happens?
I think Usman, obviously he's hard to catch on the feet.
Yeah.
I can't see a scenario where the first fight plays out again.
That's what I was going to ask you.
Right?
Is that... Now... You were talking about the acumen or the IQ, I guess, of Edwards. What do you think about Usman in this scenario? Because he has shown market improvement on the feet. Like, does he fall in love with the idea of, like, I could show the world that I could beat this guy striking? Because
that's a recipe for defeat when you.
Well, that's
what
I mean. But sometimes these guys, they do that sort of thing. And like, do you see a scenario where he's like wants to make that point?
Dude, if round one of this fight is really just round four of their last one, you know, that's not a winning path for Edwards, I don't believe.
No.
However, again, I'm going to go back to it, dudes. People like Kamaru are special, right? And they make the job look easier than it is. But, dude, the difference between Kamaru and the contenders, well, we can say whatever we want. The truth is, on a given night, it's thin. It's thin, which is why doing it 16 times in a row is fucking extraordinary. Yeah. And so I'll go back to it. If Kamaru doesn't manage risk well, if he tries to strike too much, if Edwards, you know, turns it up a little bit, if there's any lingering issue with the hand, any of those factors can overturn the apple cart. But, like, should Kamaru win, I think there's a very clear path for him, right?
We're going to see the Kamaru wrestler. We're going to see the old...
Think so? I think he comes back?
Then there's that potential, right?
Right.
That it's just kind of...
I mean, I agree with the spirit of what you're saying, that he's going to try to show that full evolution. Because this represents an opponent from the old Kamaru era. And that era was still dominant, too,
remember,
by the way.
Remember, they put Ronda Rousey on the cover of Ring Magazine, didn't they, after her knockout of Betch Kahia?
Yeah.
And suddenly she was a boxer, and they were talking about her being able to beat...
Yeah, that went poorly, I heard.
I don't know how it worked out.
I heard
out.
That went very poorly. So.
Remember that gif of her? Yeah. Throwing, you know, it was like she was...
I don't
think Usman's falling into this, but I'm like, the bottom line is he has improved enough. Especially after the Masvidal thing. Of course, we've seen him beat Covington after that, but you just never know. You never know in a fight if they're just like, you know what, I'm going to prove something. You know what I mean? So there is a little bit of a wild
card. If Hopla
there.
Had taken her name in marriage, would you have been okay with that? It's 2022.
Yeah, I would have been okay with that.
Me too.
I guess.
You know? Yeah. That would have been a nice gesture.
That would be funny.
Okay.
He is the Yoko Ono of MMA.
Wow, you're going to go that far? Wow, okay.
All right,
back to Luke. Yeah.
All right, ready?
Yeah.
Here we go, let's pick it up. All right, well, with that in mind.
Why did it fall? Did
what
it
was
drop?
That?
Yeah.
Let's talk about the co-main event, please. Here we go.
What is it again?
Luke Rockhold is back after 3 years, I believe, taking on Paulo Costa. Boy, That feels like a crossroads fight, huh, Chuck?
Jesus.
It's been a long time since we're talking about Luke Rockhold and like a...
I think both of them haven't won since 2019.
The Blachowicz fight at 205 was sort of an experiment, even though that's high
further
level.
Back. 2017 for Rockhold.
Well, he beat David Branch.
I think it was 2017.
You might be right. It's been a while.
It's been a long-ass time. One of those fights, I mean, honestly, when you're looking at it, where's the weird part of it? I think it's Rockhold, because he's been knocked out three of the last four times. The last three times he's knocked out very violently, and you worry about him a little bit, right? Like, you're like, I don't know, why is he doing this? Is he going to hang on to this? And he's going against a guy who had a major run for knockouts not that many years ago. Like, he was, you know, there were four or five leading to the Israel Adesanya, you know, that whole thing. So it's one of those fights I'm like, you understand why they're booking this from the name value, from the ranking standpoint, from the, like, what these guys still believe they have in them. But there is a real potential of sadness, a sad note to this one, especially from the Rockhold position. I know that, you know, Costa's lost a couple in a row as well, but I don't feel like he's in the same spot. This is a guy who's a former champion who at one point, I think, really did turn our heads and say, wow, how good is this guy? And then that Michael Bisping, it seemed like a fluke at the time, has derailed this whole situation to the point where now he's in this type of fight and you're not sure how to look at it. You know what I mean? So it has that weird sad note, potential sad note thing for Luke Rockhold, but...
I don't see a scenario where Luke Rockhold doesn't get stopped in here. And I love Luke Rockhold. Yeah. I want him to dial it back and find that guy again, Luke. But even if Costa... Yeah. Look, I got a lot of questions about who Paulo Costa still is, kind of mentally mixed with the physically, from the whole fallout of the weird...
Red wine
incident. And, you know, even coming back and losing to Vittori, it's like he fought like a knucklehead in a way. He fought like, I'm just going to lean on my power and brawling and take it on the chin and keep coming back. If that's who he's going to be moving forward, he could probably still win this fight by knockout. I mean, we're asking a lot of Luke Rockhold right now.
It's a lot. And he came back and decided to go back to middleweight, you're right, which was previously hard for him to make. I do wonder about, I mean, you could say what happened to 205 wasn't any different, but, you know, are there durability issues in general and specifically at 185? These are big questions against a guy who is wild, but a heavy fucking hitter, but in Paulo Costa. And Costa, you know, that derailment that BC's talking about against Izzy, that did a number on him, but he did show a good life, I thought, in the Vittori fight, even though
he
lost.
Heart, okay? Yeah. He showed toughness, but did you get any of those feels I did that from the interviews around that to the way he navigated that fight game plan wise, that I almost feel like we may never see that dialed in title contender again. We'll still see a dangerous guy who can win fights against certain names, but you know, I mean, I'm projecting a lot, Chuck.
I just saw things that didn't
give me a good feeling about the direction.
We were talking about this with Pettis.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes. So doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Last week, whatever it was, we were talking about Anthony Pettis, and you're like, the way he lost, it's the way he's talking about it, the way he's kind of casting the blame and stuff like that, that you're like, that's also a red flag. It's not just him in there getting, you know, outworked or outclassed by somebody. It's the way they're losing, and I kind of catch that a little bit with both guys. Honestly, you're not real happy with the way they're losing in the sense of, like, how they're handling it, the way they're looking at it. It's not really on par with some of the way, you know, the outside.
Yeah, they're both riding a losing streak heading into
this. That's true. That's true. And I feel like, yes, that definitely applies to Paulo Costa.
Okay, but there is a happy ending potentially, right, depending on one's perspective, certainly.
If they both go to the party afterwards and just slay together.
Those two would walk in and then, in the words of Charlie Murphy, walk out and just drain the club. All the women would leave. Okay, but let's say Luke Rockhold wins. Hey, that's a relevant.
That's why
tough.
This fight's wild.
Right.
That's a big ass win if he gets
it. Let's get hyperbolic here. Because of his name and because he's called out Izzy a whole bunch of times, like, he's not out of the question of getting a title shot off this win. Seriously, think about it. I would think the promotion would want nothing more than that at this point.
Man. That's an interesting thought.
Yeah, I haven't really thought about it. Well, he does.
They're fast tracking contenders. Luke Rockhold is a big name.
He would not be the co-main event if he didn't. If he didn't still have that juice on his name, like, I just don't believe he's in this spot. But, man, I mean, if he's able to pull that off, this is one of those things you're like, you're never quite sure, because we have seen the rare example of guys who they look like they're in the twilight of their career, they're getting knocked out, and they have like a little resurgence, and then we just see them get knocked out three more times down the stretch. And you're always like, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know where he's at, but it would temporarily get there, but I'm not sure I believe in his long-term durability to do that.
I think he's 36 or 37. That's what I mean.
37.
He's got big strike durability.
He does.
Now, look, when you look at who he's get stopped by, outside of the Bisping one, which was shocking, although it was a clean, clear left hook on the chin. Look, I mean, he got knocked out against the most violent version of Romero, the most fucking violent version of TRT Belfort we'd ever seen.
Right.
And what, against Jan, one weight class up, but I think
he also got rocked a little bit by David Branch.
The connective tissue, whether we're talking about prime Bisping or this prime Rockhold or this aftermarket version, is he fights arrogantly. He fights too arrogantly.
Yes.
And I don't know if he has a suspect chin as much as he just sometimes puts himself in spots where you're like, that wasn't a good spot to be in with your hands in that position. Really,
Yeah, because here's the thing. It's like, dude, Luke Rockhold can wrestle. And for folks who don't know, his jiu-jitsu is excellent.
Oh, yeah.
It is excellent.
His kickboxing game is sick.
Dude, why would you imagine, again, taking down Bohushini is not so easy, but let's imagine, like, is that in play? It seems, at least on paper, it should be part of the attack no matter what. Let's see what he can do with it. Because, dude, if you can just take his back, my God. Like, dude, that's a very winnable fight for Luke Rockhold. But he has to choose to fight in that dimension.
What's the best Luke Rockhold you've ever seen? The Machida fight, maybe?
The first Bisping fight with the one-arm guillotine. From mount.
Do you feel like he's a sentimental favorite in any sense? I mean, like, you know, some guys, like, they're a former champion.
He definitely had an audience that was applauding him in some way, even though he's always been polarizing, but heading to the Weidman fight.
Yeah.
I felt like both guys had fan bases rallying around each one in that
still
way.
Still sad we never saw that rematch at 199. I still have that poster of the two of them. I wanted to see that fight back.
Yeah, it was a weird one.
I still would see an old guy version, although can Weidman?
No, thanks. I don't want to see that.
All right. Has Weidman ever lost in the cage as hard as he was stopped by Patty Stenger at the end of that Millionaire Matchmaker episode?
You mean Luke Rockhold?
Yeah, she sent him to hell.
Wow, I didn't see
that. The way he treated those girls, you know?
Yeah, you know, he was doing his thing. Again, this is the question we had for Uriah. It's like, what was it like when you got famous and then women suddenly were in your DMs? He was kind of like, yeah, they've kind of always been there.
I never really had a problem.
I really had an issue with that. I mean,
he didn't even understand the question. He's like, you guys just can't get laid
ever,
at will.
Did you ever see Uriah back in the day? Like, were you ever around events where he was at? I remember going to a pool party that they
had to beat him off with a stick, bro.
It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. I've seen him in Vegas too, multiple times too. It's not a problem for that guy.
Yeah,
let's put it that way.
Rockhold in Southern California or Costa on the beach in Rio in a Speedo, who cleans up?
Okay, this conversation is getting stupid. We're now into wardrobe.
But to answer your question, the latter.
The answer is Costa. The answer is Costa.
Okay.
Well, let's talk about him for just a second. Let's imagine a world where so Luke Rockhold wins. Yay, people are happy for him. Okay, but that would mean Bohushini would be on a three-fight losing streak at
this
that
is
point.
After wild like
a and you could say whatever. He lost to Izzy the champ or Vettori, number one contender. Fine. You lost to a guy who, yes, Luke Rockhold's obviously very good, but it would be on paper a guy who hadn't fought in three fucking years. That would be a bad loss.
That would sting. That's gonna hurt him.
That would hurt. His stocks, I feel like, shaky.
His stock after
the Romero fight was all-time high.
I think he's on his way to being just a name action fighter who trades wins and losses at this level. And I don't want that for him. But I feel like, what's the most together, competent, future potential champion version we saw? Was it the incredible fight with Romero? Was that the best version of him? God, that fight was great.
Hendricks was great. You're asking me, like, what's a nice win? Hendricks was a nice win. He gave Hendricks the business.
Uriah Hall?
Smoked him.
Yeah, the Hendricks one I like a little bit more. Yeah. But, yeah.
I mean, dude, the version of him, I mean, he pushed that pace against Romero. He made that fight that crazy.
Yes, but it was, you know, he took a lot of damage.
I would feel like at this point, if he loses this fight, it would be one of those steep ledges, like where you're like, this guy, I felt like he was going here, and then, you know what I mean? Like, it would be like a very, very steep decline for a guy that you thought was going to do a lot more, you know, at this point. But
we also can't tell if the pre-Izzy episode, where it was the wine and not sleeping, right, and then just totally, like, just not having a great performance, was that a one-time thing?
Right.
Because remember, heading into this fight, there was the whole, a nurse alleged that he assaulted her over a vaccine card. Because it's just like, I mean, the most MMA story imaginable.
And there are so many.
And then he gave his credit card info to Rumble, and you know, it just evolved from there.
You get the idea. Yeah. It's like, what's going on with this guy?
And they were like, Caraway, do you have access to ATV?
He has a good team around him, and obviously he's got ability, but you still wonder, like, is he gonna, like, you know, have a nice steady performance again, something like that.
I just think this one was sting. I'm not saying it would be the end of him, you know, but this one's going to hurt. I don't think he regains the sheen. Where he's at right now, a co-main event in this type of status where he actually still has a chance. The sheen.
Wow, I like that. That's very manly. Yeah.
I feel like he'd lose that for good if he loses
this. Does this compare to the Gustafson situation in the sense that, like, long time back, finally coming back, probably to the more appropriate weight class? Remember Gustafson tried the heavyweight thing?
Same ending. That's
same ending. Are we going to, like, let's say it looks like that, right? Let's talk about that scenario. In that scenario, is that it for Luke Rockhold? You think he probably hangs it up after that? It seems like, and here's the problem, it's a ferocious puncher.
And it's funny with Luke Rockhold. You've talked to Luke before.
Not recently.
Okay, but I mean, like, he's a guy who actually does have certain business outside of, like, he's got life outside of fighting, but he's a weird guy, man, who, like, he gets stuck in his craw, like, he wants to correct things. I feel like, in part, that's what this is. He has a kind of a rivalry or unresolved thing he wants to do with this guy. But if it doesn't go his way, I don't know if he has it in him just to walk away at that point, like, without getting a victory or something. He's one of those guys, you know, I think, that would want to go out on a high note. But he does have stuff. Like, he was doing modeling and all kinds of stuff at some point. I know he has other business ventures. I feel like he's...
Loren, I mean, he was doing legit stuff.
I mean, he's got life outside of fighting. So I would like to see him. You always want to see guys get out gracefully as they can, you know, but and he's up there in age, man. I mean, it's not going to get better.
I just feel like he doesn't actually have to win, but he's got to show life.
Well, maybe that's it.
He's got to show life.
That's an interesting question. Is there a loss that's a win for him?
If he goes in there and is, like, competitive and, like, wins a round and is fighting his heart out, you know, doesn't get it done, but, like, yeah, I'd be interested in seeing that. It's a different thing at that point, but it's still a good thing.
Like, we got a great fight for you next. Sam Alvey. There it is. You know,
oh, my God. Yeah. Sam's been booted.
We'll pour one out for Sam, you know.
Glad you brought that conversation to a halt.
Yeah, I mean, apparently it's the only thing I'm good for.
The old BC grenade.
Poor Sam.
All right.
Poor Sam.
We can talk about the feature fight on the main card, which, of course,
it's a great fight.
Jose Aldo is back.
Yeah, I love this one.
Taking on Merab. I'm sure I'm fucking his name up, but they say on the broadcast, Dewalish Wheely. There's a V there, but they pronounce it like a W.
7-fight win streak for Dewalish Wheely.
Incredible. And has a win over the guy that beat Aldo in the sense of Moraes. Now, he got a slightly different one by the time Merab fought him. Although Merab had to come back from defeat. Here's how this one looks to me, Chuck. Tell me if I'm wrong. BC and I have talked about this a few times. Right. Aldo shown tremendous life at bantamweight. Not perfect run, but he's shown
very fight win streak.
Yes. Yep, and he's shown against good fighters. Not the best ones, but very good ones. Yeah. Here he is against a guy who is not as skilled as him, but has maybe the most impressive motor in that division, and maybe in all of UFC or even MMA. An absolute insane cardiovascular conditioning level. How's this one going to go, and what's it going to mean?
Well, if I'm Jose Aldo, I'm watching the first half of the Moraes fight with Merab and saying, like, okay, look, this is how he was doing it. And it plays into his strengths, because if you're watching that fight, Moraes was just, like, taking his lead leg and just, like, whapping it. He was just, like, attacking it and setting up what he was going to do. And then he put him in the deep water very quickly in that round, about midway through it. That's what I'm doing if I'm Jose Aldo. I'm looking at that and I'm saying, we can duplicate this. We can do something like this, because he's longer, he's rangy. You know, I feel like that's the game plan. But, man, that's a tough fight when you really think about it, because Merab, man, just Merab, it wasn't just that you saw him, like, get rocked and all that stuff, because then it's like he looks mortal. But then he doesn't in the same round, which is just insane.
He turned into a zombie.
It was like one of those crazy things. I went back and watched that recently. I was like, dude, it's still as improbable to watch the way that round played out as the first time watching it live.
It shows how much he wants it.
Yeah, and then his corner just telling him, like, hey, man, now you've taken his best shot. Now go break him. You know, and it's like he goes in there and breaks him. That's a tough, tough man. He's facing in there, man.
Jose has to control all the terms of this fight. And it's going to come through some of those ways that Moraes had early success. Of course, if Jose's actually able to keep himself off the ground more often than he's on it, and if he is allowed through the threat of his power to control those terms and do at a pace which is more pleasable for him, what's Merab's striking level at that point to compete on this level?
Haymakers, which they land in MMA. They land.
Yeah.
But it haymakers.
So you're saying Merab's A game which is an incredible A game, has to be in effect for him to win this fight?
Yeah, which doesn't mean he has to win every round, but overall he has to find a way to take... I mean, by the way, actually, this is the interesting part. It's not a 5-round fight. It's a 3-round fight.
Yes.
So you got to put a pace on Jose here. You gotta...
I don't believe that they made this one 5 rounds. I don't believe that's right.
No, it's 3.
So here you are with a situation where if you're either guy, dude, I mean, you can't be, like, giving away rounds in this one. There's just not enough. I will say, though, if it's shorter, it favors Aldo, right? It's less of a sprint he has to go. You could imagine him winning the first 3 rounds, and then 4 and 5, Merab just utterly ready to run a fucking marathon at that point, begins to really put some steam on him, but that's not the situation
it's
we face.
Not the situation at all, and that makes this more interesting.
That is true. That is true. As a 3-round, it is a little bit more. It is. It's an interesting fight. I just, man, Aldo, I will say this for Aldo. I don't know how you guys felt when he made the drop initially. This is 5 fights now, the 6th fight at bantamweight. When he was doing that, I felt like it was such a horrible idea.
Like
this is a guy, desperation. Also, a guy who struggled to make 145 most times. Mm-hmm. He was like, when people talk about anybody dropping down, who you're like, there's no way. That's how it felt. Like he was dropping down to weight, and for him to be in this position, where now he can place himself into contention again, you know, basically because they gifted him on Legacy the first contention at bantamweight.
He got a title shot off a loss,
right? So it's like they gifted him off of his career. But this would be like where he earns it. This would be one of the crazier twilight turnarounds of any champion we've seen in a reinvention.
It would also be a Frankie Edgar-like way of constant reinvention. It's in always, okay, you lost against that elite guy, but 2 or 3 fights later, you're right back in the contention. That's sort of Frankie Edgar after winning the title originally.
Especially against Merab.
We know, he just teased what that stake potentially for Jose. I mean, he may cut the line with a win here. This is as tough a fight for Jose as you can imagine the division. What about Merab? Does he cut the line with a win? How crowded is this bottleneck title picture atop it?
It's a great question, right? Because we've got, I mean, the most insane, unlikely fight ever. You've got Piotr Jan at UFC 280 fighting Sugar Sean O'Malley. You're like, what the
fuck? And
if O'Malley
wins,
you got Aljo Dillashaw, which is a badass.
You got Corey Sandhagen. There's a lot of turnover that's about to happen. So what I would say is it's kind of really hard to map that out. There's so many permutations of how this could go. But for sure, I'll say this. If you're Merab and you get a win, certainly puts you in play. If you're Merab and however unlikely you may think it, if you stop Jose Aldo, that is some extra juice on your contendership card. Big
and look
time.
At what it did to Jan. We were like, oh.
And Jan had to do it the championship rounds, I believe. I believe that was round 4.
I mean, he did punch him in the back of the skull 54 times, but that happens in fight.
You're right, but he didn't. You didn't see him complain after the fight about it too much. I
didn't. By the way, talk about reinvention. Jose coming back from that loss, now back at this level again.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be the end for
him. Jose coming back from the 2.
Because the Moraes loss, was just technical.
It's a quiet storyline again. Even on this fight week, I'm like, it's unlikely, right? It's just so unlikely that you would be able to do all those things. You know, go through the losses he did, the weight cut that he's doing, and then all of a sudden have a run in that division. I just don't feel like anybody really saw it.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, here's the thing about Aldo that we should discuss, though. Even if he beats Merab, and even if he beats Merab convincingly, yes, he could cut the line, but there's some uncertainty about that, right? He's in play.
If O'Malley wins, there's no way.
Right. If O'Malley starches Jan, which, again, is unlikely, but let's say, if this is the fight game, shit like that happens. Yes, all bets are off at that point. But what I would want to point out is, what if Aldo loses? Right, in that world. Because right now he's playing with like a faint hope of a potential one more go at the title. It's not like losing to Merab is losing to some bum. You're not. You're losing to a very talented fighter. But it would kind of signal, given the other losses, that you're not going to beat the top 5 guys. That's not where the state you're in anymore. Do you think he buys into that idea? Or what happens if he loses?
He's one of those guys, man, who I feel like fighting is kind of what they do.
Yep.
You know? He's
going to find something to make him stop.
That's what I'm saying.
You think so?
I think so. It was funny because it's sort of like Anderson Silva back in the day, because when they were on their highest runs, they were like, they were threatening to retire at any minute. Remember, they were always like, yeah, I'm pretty much out of this. Nah, I'm going to take another. You know, they keep going. But he, in actuality, like, I really believe he's one of those guys. He's, I don't see him wanting to quit. You know what I mean? I don't think you're even doing what he's doing unless you really want it. So
we're not
here
to necessarily romanticize the legacy of Jose Aldo. I think we're going to do that in another clip tomorrow, actually, which romanticize away. It's freaking incredible where he what he's done. But how about how quickly he responded to the starching by Connor, the two stoppage losses against Holloway, the reinvention at Bantamweight. No, it didn't go his way at first. He lost, but then they gifted him a title shot. But then he was viciously stopped by that young cat. But now he's built another win streak. This is what he does, man.
It is.
And when it's what you do and you're that great, but your intangibles are also as great as your elite skills are, you're going to always believe you can come back again because you've done it. That's why Muhammad Ali lingered until, again, they physically removed him. You know, I'm not saying Jose is Ali-like necessarily, but they're closer to each other than Jose to a lot of other fighters. I mean, he's of the all-time ilk. People have long said, hey, BC, when you're always talking about the upper room of the top five, you never mention
Aldo.
Jose. And I always say, okay, he's the tier right below that. But if you want to put Jose in the overall GOAT category, it's not like anyone's going to protest outside your building and say that's a bad idea. This guy's done it. And it's because he's always able to find that extra what's left inside. He's always going to believe that it's there, Luke. So I don't even think if he loses here, it deters him from trying to find a big fight after that. I'm not saying he's trying to fight the winner of MVP and Mike Perry at BKFC, but I'm saying, you know, look, I still want to see him in a rematch with Conor anyway, you know?
That would be cool.
Or would that have to be lightweight right now? They would have to be.
Yeah, I mean, that's not top of the priority list.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Still, just the same, if he loses, I do think it calls into question, again, although maybe I'm contradicting myself, that turnover at bantamweight could be extraordinary. There's a lot of different ways he could play this, but it would be a bad sign for his. He's not getting any younger either, by the way.
Do you feel like he's safer? Like, I mean, maybe you guys are going to deep
slightly, slightly safer.
I mean, obviously, like he's their decision victories. He's finding ways. He's fine. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't think it's safer. I think he can't fight at that pace anymore.
Yeah. Okay.
Especially with the weight cut.
I'd buy that.
I think he's just, again, there is a trade-off between smarts and not all the time, but there is something of a correlation between how smart you are and how devastating you are.
Yeah.
And he's devastating. Some of the leg kicks have made a comeback, which has been
everything he throws is with full power.
It's with full power. He commits. So, he's not afraid of contact.
In this one.
But yeah, he doesn't quite have the sting, maybe in ways.
I mean, when he got the shit kicked out of him twice against Holloway, to be blunt, I respected him like so much more than I ever had. Not that there was ever reason before that not to. He's a legend. He's the king of Rio. But the way he went out there and was like, I am going to keep trying to win this fight until you stop me.
Yeah.
I remember just thinking, this guy's a fucking savage. I mean, he is absolutely bout it. And I think that's the spirit that's still carrying him.
The Peter Yawn fight. I mean, like, the way he went in there and did that, I was like, same thing. I mean, I have ultimate respect for him anyway, but it's just such an improbable thing, you know? I don't really, I mean, obviously this is the real truth moment, because you're going against a guy who's 7-fight win streak and he's kind of bookmarked. I think a lot of people are like, well, this guy's going to be a champion eventually. You know, like, people see him that way.
Is he the best?
This is supposed to be when they put him on the ice floor and give it a kick and say, so long, Jose Aldo, you know?
I'm just thinking about this out loud. He's the best fighter in WEC history, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he has to be. I think that's right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's
true. I mean, he was a lesser version of who he is now in certain ways, obviously. But in terms of, like,
dude, he had, like, 7 title defenses.
Dude, yeah, I mean,
maybe it was 3 there and then 7 in the UFC.
Beat the shit out of Uriah. Just took the belt from Mike Thomas Brown when Mike Thomas Brown was a fucking hammer. And then, you know, the shit he did to Cub and stuff. I mean,
first Mendes fight, too.
Dude, he was just, that was in UFC, but still, he was wrecking people. It was crazy.
All right, so to flip side to end this, Marab, you know that cabinet I got that I add tools to often,
the Russian hammer cabinet.
I know he's Georgian?
Georgian, that's right.
Do we add him?
Long Island.
Do we add his mallet to the cabinet, which has, you know, to be fair, right now in the cabinet, it's Rachmanov, it's Makhachev. Let me feel around. Right here is Ankalaev. Usman Nurmagomedov is over here. Magomed Karimov is right over here. Or maybe Magomedov. Sorry. Magomedov.
Is this you being a creep?
No, he's groping.
Do we have room back here, Luke? I also have a few other Eastern European hammers. We're going to add him to that group, right?
Yeah, he's in there as well.
He's not there yet.
What I would like to see, right, what I would like to see is he could win based on the skills he has. I think it's not the likeliest outcome, but certainly possible. But if he can start putting some real...
leather.
The thing is, a lot of people have to apportion their offense because they don't have the cardio to power it. They have to think about a strategy that they can maintain for 15 minutes if they have to. He really doesn't. So, yeah. Dude, open up. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to get hit, but, like, you can do what you want to do. Just get good at one particular aspect of it. The cardio can power you as far as you want to go.
I think he learns, too, from that last fight. Like, he's one of those guys, man, who's still on the come up, still very hungry, training that way. Like, he, before that fight, like, so, he, you know, that round was what it was. It was a classic round. But, like, you go backwards, and there's really very few rounds where anybody's beaten him. You know what I mean? Like, right. I think Saman had like a round where it was just pretty good. But if you go backwards, he has a lot of 30-26s, 30-27s, or 30-25s.
Just all over
like the place. Like, he just dominates guys. You
I
know what I mean?
The Chimaev hammer's also in here.
Yeah.
But like a guy like Ricky Simon, who's leveled up as well, Ricky Simon had that hard fought win over him. I think, you know, this is an interesting fight for Merab because he gets a big name and he's earned it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would like to see him begin to put together some real, like, amazing. Ground control, yeah. Ground. Slow the fight. You can go a million miles an hour. Slow the fight down. Start putting some steam on these guys.
You think we'll ever see the heart punch be a prominent weapon in MMA?
That's when the BC grenade. Here it is.
Yeah.
Just rolled it in the room.
I mean, it can't feel good if it's open.
The pen hit over
Chuck,
there.
Chuck, if you leave that open, if you and I ever cross each other in like a bar or something, and we're like, we had a good run, but you know, fuck you, Chuck. I'm going right for your heart.
And you're doing like the Jim Carrey Dumb and Dumber thing where you pulled out of his chest to put it in a bag and give it to Lauren Holly. Is that you?
Yes. In the dream sequence.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be fun. There is one other fight of note. There's a Miranda Maverick fight on the card. Oh, no. It's the
Romanov.
The Romanov taking on.
Alexander Romanov from Romania?
That's right, from Romania. Moldova.
Let me put some respect on the Moldovians.
Yes.
He was the largest betting favorite in UFC history in his last fight.
Yes.
Chase Sherman.
Taking on Marcin Tybura, which is the right next fight for him, dude. This guy, Romanov, undefeated, kind of strong, kind of fun, kind of got a little edge to him. I like this fight.
Five finishes.
Right.
All on the, you know, that's tough.
Right.
That's tough to do.
His grappling like throws are sick.
Showcase,
right?
you're putting him against a tough escalation opponent.
Yeah, tough escalation opponent, but one where, like, if he is the goods, he should look good.
Right. I think that that's
this is still the Augusto Sakai level, with all due respect. After
Tybura's
this,
tough.
He's after
tough.
This, you're going to be knocking on that next level. Like, he may catch a Derek Lewis coming down after this, right? Like, that type of level of matchmaking.
That's fair.
It's time.
Yeah.
It might be time. If he blows Tybura away, if he makes Tybura.
Are you going to put him in your little grope box back here?
That's a good question.
I mean, if he's able
if he
to
makes
do that.
Tybura look like Sean Gannon did against Brandon Lee Henkel.
Dude, that was a bad fight.
That was a deep pull, right? Dude, how about BC? BC's like, just let me find it. It's under here. Let me pull it.
Dude, that was
out.
A terrible fight. So Sean Gannon, for folks
who don't know. He had bad tats, too.
Dude, Sean Gannon beats Kimbo underground. UFC signs him, and then Brandon Lee Hinkle goes in there and demolishes him.
Yo, but also between the signing and the debut, Sean Gannon got those tats of like the angel wings on his shoulders. It's not a good look, man. Not a good look.
I heard he's having a rough go of it. Well, glad BC.
They should have had that rematch in Elite XC. That's what they should have done.
I'm sure Gary Shaw tried.
Instead of Seth Petruzzelli, it should have been. Okay, they're telling Sean me Gannon. In my ear, we've done a strong hour, a power hour.
All right.
You want to go any further?
No, I'm good.
he's been trying to get out since half hour.
Chuck, how can folks find your work?
Well, they can go to themyth.com.
M-I-T-H.
Yes, M-I-T-H. That's where I'm at. Twitter is Chuck Mendenhall. So those are the primary places.
Go to the Ringer thing.
The Green Room.
We do the Ringer MMA show.
That's right.
Every Thursday and most Saturdays after the event.
PT Carroll, Ariel Helwani.
Big community. It's, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's grown exponential over the last year. We just passed our year mark on it. So,
nice.
Yeah, it's been nice. Yeah.
Good.
Any pilgrimages to Colorado coming up?
Not till December. Yeah.
Back to the motherland.
Yeah.
Bro, the dispensaries there will put you on your
You
ass.
Love Denver. You actually love it. I remember the Glory Kickboxer.
Whoa.
You're having a good time out there.
You know what I learned today? His, you know, father and his grandpappy and his granddaddy's daddy, they were like mountain men in Colorado.
They were.
You know, the mountain men, my sister lives outside of Boulder. When you go up into the mountains, there's legit mountain men.
Oh, there is. And I'm George Charles Mendenhall IV.
Oh, shit.
And George Charles Mendenhall I is still in a mine. That blew up at 28 years old
shit.
In Leadville, Colorado.
Whoa.
Oh, that's like that movie you talked to me about, the 13 Mile?
Those were Thai kids who are on a soccer team who were trapped in an underwater cave.
Very close.
Connective tissue. Obviously.
All of whom were extracted. It's the exact opposite.
Yo, shout out to baby Jessica if you're watching, by the way. She made it out. She did. Yo, she did, okay?
By the way,
if you know the movie Alive?
I do.
Yeah, yeah. I've told Luke that, like, I've already donated my organs. You can check out my license, but if it comes down to it in any situation where we're together and he needs to survive, yo, he can eat the shit out of my ass flesh, okay? Don't toss the salad, bro. Go right for the meat, okay?
I'm not eating that liver. I'll tell you that right now, man. That's yours.
That's great.
I can't tell you how happy I would be to go hungry. How delighted I would be.
I love how at the five-minute mark, every time is when you, like, decide to
leave. I love it. Rogan would be like, well, Luke, how did you survive out there? He's like, remember that co-host I told you about? Yo.
Some dude?
Yeah, yo, I ate that guy.
What did Rogan call you? Some guy?
Yeah, that other
guy. The other guy, yes. Yeah. Co-host
okay,
and the
if
other
I tatted
guy.
Was that when you were on the show?
So when I was on the show, I called him co-host.
If I tatted
and then Rogan,
my ass.
Rogan to someone else called him that other
if
guy.
If I did your dream and tatted my ass ahead of time, would you be more or less likely to eat it? Would that change the meat with the ink in there?
It might. It might. I might be more inclined to eat that artwork.
I don't want to do this anymore. I'm done, okay? I'm done.
What have I done?
Yo, I feel like Pat Barry in this t-shirt. You
know? That's it. Chuck Mendenhall. Fucking Brian Campbell, Luke Thomas.
Yeah,
the show
I mean,
is stupid.
Really, right? It's the worst. Get out of here, right?